Welcome to the Canon Cast, a weekly podcast from the Canon, SB Nation's blog about the Columbus Blue Jackets. Training camp is officially here, and the Blue Jackets are once again playing hockey, or something very close to it. We'll talk about the start of the preseason, Zach Werenski's new contract, and we'll kick off the first of our four division previews. I am Ryan Rial. Joining us for this episode, we've got Eric Seeds. Hey, Seeds, how you doing?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Things are good. Things are good. And we've got Pale Dragon. Petey, how are you tonight?
Good. I woke up feeling dangerous. I've got my Joe Thomas jersey on. And for those of you listening Tuesday or thereafter, you can laugh at me being excited for the game in which the Browns will likely blow it to the Jets' second string quarterback.
Hey, look at it this way. There's no way that game on Monday night is as awful as the game I attended on Saturday.
Don't tempt fate. Don't tempt. This is Browns Jets.
For those of you unaware, I went to the Michigan State Arizona State sporting contest that can only be called football in the loosest of terms.
No, dude, this is Browns Jets, two of the dumbest NFL franchises on Monday Night Football, which has often been dumb lately. Don't doubt how awful this game can be.
You guys know how to pick them.
Oh yeah.
Well, we should have a lot to talk about this episode because training camp is finally here. If you're listening to this on Tuesday when we release it, the Blue Jackets play their first preseason game tonight against Buffalo, and then they play the rest of, they play Pittsburgh, and preseason is here. Training camp is open. I don't know how much you guys have been able to take in, but what have your impressions been so far about the week that we've seen of preseason?
Yes, I haven't been able to see much of it. I've just read the reports. The thing I'm most excited about is that Seed's nemesis, Alex Wennberg, apparently looks pretty good. So that's encouraging. I mean, it's only camp, but him looking good in scrimmages is better than him not looking good in scrimmages.
I'm hopeful Alexander Wennberg can maybe it's that confidence thing that he supposedly found at the IIHF Worlds last spring did him a little bit of wonders, and he's actually, found his game and came to camp willing to rediscover his game here in Columbus and, play well. I've mostly been following the goaltending. Obviously, I haven't been there. I was out of town all weekend. So I've been reading all the reports and mostly been focused on the goaltending, see how Elvis and Jonas Korpisalo have looked, and they look, it sounds like, fine. Elvis is working on, based on the reports, working on where shooter locations are coming from just because of the smaller ice, and that's kind of just a thing he has to work on. But it sounds like both guys are committed to working hard and trying to not let the team drop too far from Sergei Bobrovsky's performance last season. So that's kind of what my big focus is this preseason.
Well, we joked about Gustav Nyquist being the fellow Swede that Wennberg has lacked since the departure of Wild Bill Carlson. But it seems like there may actually be some truth to that. It seems like Nyquist might actually be making a difference with regard to Wennberg's play.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily because they're countrymen, although that could certainly
that was
help things. But he also, his style of play could very well complement Wennberg. I think he's a veteran player. He knows how to get open, so Wennberg can pass and find him, and he can get into the dirty areas around the goal, and he can score from there as well. And then, Bjorkstrand can be your sniper. So I think there's a lot of solid tactical reasons why that line could work.
And then we also have all of the young guys who are trying to make the team. There is some room with the departure of Artemi Panarin and Ryan Dezingle and Matt Duchene. And we've seen Trey Fix-Wolanski making some plays. He stole a puck from Seth Jones the other day. The speedsters are out. It's fun to read about those guys too, because that's kind of what preseason, the first week of preseason is for.
Yeah, so I'm excited for tomorrow night. Emil Bemström is in the lineup. So I'm really excited to get a first look at him. He wasn't able to play in Traverse City, but it looks like he's good to go for tomorrow night. I don't know who he'll be on the line with, but it's exciting to see him in the lineup. Sonny Milano is also in the lineup tomorrow, and I feel like maybe he and Bemström are kind of fighting for the same spot. So we'll see if either one of them stands out more tomorrow. Texier is also in the lineup. I don't see a ton of like locks to play center in that group. So I wonder if we're going to be seeing Texier playing center tomorrow night.
Yeah, based on the lineup they put out, I would absolutely believe they're going to put Texier at center, which I think is really good. As we well know, center depth is extremely lacking on this team and has been for pretty much all of franchise history. So, yeah, having Texier be able to play, step in and play center would be a luxury. I was listening to 31 Thoughts on the way on the drive back from Michigan yesterday, and they were they even talked about on that line, on that podcast how they believe Alexander Texier is primed for a big season here in Columbus. They think he can really be a special player down here. And they just kind of brought that up unprompted during the course of talking about the Zach Werenski contract, which kind of caught me off guard that this kid's making waves nationally and internationally, I guess. You know, it's a Canadian podcast. But here's hoping for Alex Texier to continue having what seems like a strong summer and a strong training camp. And it's hard to believe that this kid, you know, he was in, you know, he came over, played 5-7 games, whatever it was, in Cleveland, then got called up and was integral down the stretch and into the first round of the playoffs. Like, it, you know, the sky's the limit for this kid, especially if he can make the transition to center. And he's got the opportunity this summer with Liam Foudy missing the first bit of camp here with an injury. It sounds like he sustained up in Traverse City. So, yeah, here's hoping for something good tomorrow night.
And I think 2 years ago, he was playing in Grenoble, France. what works out to like a semi-pro league, essentially. And now he's on the cusp of being a potentially, you know, second line center in the NHL. It's pretty crazy.
Well, Seeds, I'm glad you mentioned Traverse City, because last week we had Brian Hedger on the podcast and he called from Traverse City, but that was before the final two games. So we actually, I have not talked on the CannonCast about Traverse City, but really the big story, I think, for all Jackets fans was what we talked about, which was Texier just dominating and playing center for Coach Mike Eaves up there and, you know, scoring in overtime multiple times and just kind of dominating on the dot. I'll take that.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Seeds, you also mentioned something else we're going to get to, Zach Werenski, which also happened pretty much right as soon as we released last week's podcast. Zach Werenski signs with the Blue Jackets, 3 years, $5 million per, kind of what everybody thought. And then it kind of came out, there was some, maybe some backlash from the analytics crowd for his 5-on-5 and defensive liabilities, which are fair. We could talk about that. But Zach Werenski locked up for the Blue Jackets for the next 3 years. And the timing of that is very interesting and very prescient, I think. So, guys, Zach Werenski, he's back. And he signed before camp started, before everybody had to report, which was a big deal for Tortorella all summer.
First of all, congratulations to Zach on signing his contract. Glad to have him back here. He had some quotes that came out after he signed the contract that were like, missing camp was never a consideration. It sounded like he really wanted to get this done and be here in camp. Guys, this is the first training camp since his rookie year where he has been fully healthy and had a fully healthy offseason. 2 years ago, after his rookie year, he was dealing with the facial fractures from that shot against the Penguins. And then last year, he was obviously dealing with a torn rotator cuff and rehabbing that. So Werenski's actually had a full summer where he can work out and, by all accounts, is in great shape. And it's for all the flack that he was getting last season, yeah, he was also playing his way back into shape after having that offseason surgery that required a lot of rehab. And also, the kid's only like 22 years old. The prime years for NHL defenseman, he's like just entering those years. He's got all the time in the world to build muscle, learn the game, learn the defensive roles, and in addition to being a solid point scorer in this league, like Zach Werenski's gonna be fine, guys. Don't worry about his 5-on-5 play. He'll be all right.
Yeah, and I don't think his 5-on-5 play is as bad as they seem to suggest that it was.
No, I don't either.
I mean, his shots share is still good. He has had some struggles there. I think with the stats, they missed some of the context that in the first half of last season, in addition to, getting over, you know, his shoulder rehab, which I think is still
major shoulder surgery.
But then Tortorella also changed his role and moved him down the lineup, put him in more defensive starts, I think was putting in a position to have to work on his defensive play. So I think it's not surprising that some of his numbers dropped a little because he was being asked to play a different role. But I think in the second half of the season, as he was finally fully healthy, fully conditioned, and then back up with Jones. I think that time down the lineup was actually good for him, and I think his play improved as a result of it. So, and as I said, he's only 22 years old. Like, he's just going to keep getting better and better. So I'm not worried about him. I think it's a really reasonable contract for the next 3 years. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens 3 years from now, as both he and Jones will be at the end of their contracts. Now, I do think the team will try to extend both of them, you know, well before the deadline, before they hit the open market. So I'm not too worried about that yet, but that is something to keep an eye on. I think they'll get Jones locked up first. I think Jones will want to get locked up long term, and then Werenski can sign shortly thereafter, probably for a similar term and average cap hit. I could see those guys, you know, being signed for basically the next 11 years from this point for similar amounts.
Right. And that deal is, we said $5 million per, but that deal is backloaded where that final year will be $7 million, which plays into what he would sign for his qualifying offer if he wanted to go that route. But I think if you had said to all of us, 3 years, $5 million, you know, back in July or May, we'd be fine with that. I think that's great.
Right. It kind of came under where I thought it was going to be. I figured it'd be around like a 5.5, something like that. But Werenski, apparently, I think it's a good deal for both teams or both sides here. You know, the team kind of gets him a little bit on the cheap, and Werenski gets this will still be an RFA and under team control. I think it's and he's kind of betting on himself here. I think it's a good deal for both sides.
Yeah, I think the fact that it was backloaded was important to him because, again, he gets that big qualifying offer. And so some people were concerned about the fact that, you know, he could take that $7 million qualifying offer and, you know, play a fourth year at $7 million and then just walk as an unrestricted free agent. Some people are concerned about that. I mean, certainly that is a possibility. There's just so much, though, that could happen between now and then that I'm not worried about yet. I do think that he likes it here. I think he likes playing with Jones, and I think the two of them will be willing to stay together. Now, it could be the fact where maybe each of them will be signed for 8 more years at a $10 million cap hit, but hopefully by then, with a new TV contract and a new team in the league, that the cap will go up. But yeah, those two might take up, you know, 20% of the team's cap. But
oh no, we have to pay our stars. Like,
exactly. They're going to be so good for that amount of time that it'll be worth it.
And defensemen tend to age well in the NHL. I mean, look, Mark Giordano just won his first Norris Trophy at age 36. Like, I'm not worried about that. And guys, people need to stop worrying about guys just walking after every single contract. Like, I think a lot of the fan base has been burned this summer by the departures of Bob Panarin and Duchesne. But like, you know, Panarin's the only one who reasonably could have signed. They were obviously never going to sign Bob for the term he wanted, so he was always a goner. And then Duchesne was building a house in Nashville. Like, that trade was always a rental. I think fans just need to take a step back, take a deep breath here, and realize not every single free agent we ever have ever is going to walk away just because those guys did. Just, you know, take a deep breath and step back off the ledge here, guys.
And I think we need to learn to trust Jarmo and realize that, you know, it's okay to maybe just let guys walk, and that you don't lose them for nothing. What you gain is they play for you for the entire tenure of their contract. So as long as this team is competitive, it's more worth it for us to keep these guys in the fold for as long as we can. Now, if the team starts to look like they're not going to be good for a few years, well, yeah, then you talk about maybe trading those guys for assets. But I don't think that's the mind frame that the front office is in at this point. So just, yeah, we've got, you know, Werenski for the next 4 years at least, you know, and this looks to be a competitive team for at least the next 4 years. And he's going to be a big part of that. And that's great. So let's just focus on the near future.
He's positive about the city and enjoys being here. So
Yeah. So people, he's just going to bolt for the Red Wings at the earliest chance. Like, I mean, I'm sure that was a childhood dream of his to play for the Red Wings, but he's got a pretty good deal going on here right now. I think his brother even has a job here in Columbus and lives here now. So like,
he lives with his brother here.
Yeah, and he's, you know, is close enough to his parents back in Michigan. Like, I think he seems like he's very comfortable in Columbus. And Seth Jones, by all accounts, seems to have really embraced the city. So I think these guys, assuming that they're paid fair value, which it seems like the team is willing to pay them, I think they would each be content to play the rest of their careers here, play together, continue to be one of the top pairs in the league.
It's just so nice after last season with all the Panarin and Bob and Duchesne drama to have somebody locked up before camp starts who wants to be here. And that was really the last kind of remaining lingering question with regards to offseason drama. And it's nice to have that put to bed. And the team is fun now. You know, everybody's in. Everybody's all in. So
till next summer when we get to do it with Josh Anderson. Hooray.
Woo! Yeah, well, one thing at a time. One thing at a time. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Pacific Division with our first division preview in just a moment. All right, we are back, and let's talk about the Pacific Division. We're going to start way out west with a division that's kind of wide open. Maybe there's some consensus at the top, but after that, who knows?
Yeah, so we're going to start with the Pacific Division. The important thing as far as Jackets fans are concerned is always, when do the team make these West Coast road trips, which we hate staying up for? I often fall asleep on the couch during them. Mm-hmm. We worry about what
effect travel
has. So that's
why you give
me
those recaps.
I always take at least one of them, but yeah, that's why I like to give them off. No, yeah, for all the games that I didn't have to recap, I started watching each of them, and I fell asleep on the couch during each of them. It's always fun to wake up and there's Brian Giesenslaw talking about what happened. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I didn't see the third period. So the California road trip is in early January. So I'm sure the players will enjoy getting a trip to better weather at that point. And the Western Canada trip is, hey, anyone want to guess off the top of their head?
Late March.
Early March, but it is March for the third straight season, and I hate that. I really don't like them having that kind of travel as they're, you know, doing the push to the playoffs. Hopefully they're still pushing for the playoffs. Now, I think if the team's playing well, it's not necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes a road trip like that can bring the group together. It's a good bonding experience. I think that was the case in 2018. That's when the team was on their winning streak. It was when they were on that streak of players getting hat tricks. I remember that Edmonton game where they were down 3-0 after 10 minutes and then tied it up by the end of the first period and won 7-3. That was cool. But then last year the team was struggling and they lost badly to Calgary and they lost badly to Edmonton. But then they took advantage of an off day to have a team meeting, have a dinner together in Vancouver, and then things started pick up from there. They won 7 or last 8. So that was a little bit of both sides of it. They struggled on the road, but then they came together as a team because they had nowhere else to go. Another March trip to Western Canada, not ideal. Also not ideal, in that stretch, there are two days off between Calgary and Edmonton, and then Edmonton and Vancouver are back-to-back. And I hate that. I mean, Calgary and Edmonton are in the same province. Like, that should be the back-to-back, and then an off day. Now, at least in California, Anaheim and LA are the back-to-back, and then there's an off day between traveling from Southern California to Northern California. So that's a little bit better, but oh well, that's I don't expect favors from the NHL scheduling department at this point. So I'm going to go down through last year's standings and get your guys' hot takes on each of these teams. So the winner of the division last year were the Calgary Flames with 107 points, but they made one of the more confusing moves of the offseason, I thought, in that they traded James Neal for Milan Lucic's contract. Now, no, I don't just say that they traded for Milan Lucic. I'd say they traded for Milan Lucic's contract.
Right.
Because he's got a $5.25 million cap hit for the next 4 seasons.
Oh, yeah, through the end of the CBA. I'm just going to throw my hot take out here, guys. Calgary's missing the playoffs. Calgary's going to miss the playoffs this year, and let me talk you through it. They traded for Lucic, and they have said that they're going to try him with Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau on the top line.
Oh,
we have seen this with Connor McDavid, who I don't know if you guys have looked at lately, but the life in his eyes appears dead and he's 22 years old.
Yeah, do you know how many points Lucic had last year?
Oh, I looked this up. It's something stupid like 20.
It is 20. Six goals, 14 assists in 79 games. His contract makes Brandon Dubinsky's contract look like Josh Anderson's contract.
Yeah, it's absurd, and it was bad the minute they signed it. But so yeah, they're gonna
doesn't always show up on the score sheet, guys.
Right, he was there to protect Connor McDavid, guys, because there's so many goons in the league now. You know, little 5'8 Cam Atkinson's gonna chase down Connor McDavid and, you know, rough him up in the corner. But yeah, that's my hot take. Calgary's missing the playoffs. Then their other move, they brought in Cam Talbot in one of the weirder transactions that happened in the NHL this summer, where via free agency, Edmonton and Calgary swapped goaltenders. Mike Smith is now a starting goaltender in Edmonton, and Cam Talbot came to Calgary, and he's been a sieve for the last few years over in Calgary or over in Edmonton. So yeah, I just don't think, and I think Calgary's just going to regress to the mean, especially because they're not going to get that kind of defensive performance again from Mark Giordano. Granted, he was great last year, and he might still be very good this year, but they need great up and down that lineup.
I don't know. It seems odd to have a career year at age 35. Like, you can't expect that to happen again.
You can't see it, but I'm injecting things into my body, and I'm also pointing at Tom Brady someplace up in New England. I'm just, you know, just hypothesizing.
Yeah, maybe Giordano's taking whatever Tom Brady is. Yeah, but the goaltending was bad last year, and they won despite it. I don't know if they can take that risk again.
That's what I was going to say. I think Big Save Dave Riddich really bailed them out there for the regular season, and I don't know if that 9/11 save percentage is going to happen again.
Right, and then we saw them ride Mike Smith in the playoffs right to a first round exit. So,
Matthew Tkachuk is still not signed.
Hooray!
I mean, which I think he will at some point, but you know when. So we talked about Edmonton. So let's go ahead and jump to them. So they were second to last in the division with 79 points. Do we see them getting any better?
No.
I mean, not this year. I think Tippett can make some changes. I don't know what they're doing with Mikko Koskinen. James Neal maybe will rediscover his juju. I don't like Ken Holland there at all, but you know, I think they'll get better. I don't think they'll threaten for anything.
No, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I think, and you know, hope maybe James Neal, he'll never be 30 goal James Neal like he was when Kuznetsov was feeding him pucks, or not Kuznetsov, Evgeny Malkin was feeding him pucks every night. But I didn't really super like the Ken Holland hire, but getting out from under that Lucic contract is an unequivocal win, no matter how you spin it. So that's one great thing they did this summer.
Hey, do you guys know who their fifth highest cap hit is amongst forwards? Sam Gagne.
Hey! The power play specialist himself.
Yeah, so second place in the division were the San Jose Sharks. Now they lost some pieces. Joe Pavelski is gone to Dallas, and they also lost Jonas Donskoy. Joe Thornton, Jumbo Joe, he is back for one more year at $2 million cap hit. They also had some really good contracts. Timo Meier, they signed for 4 years at $6 million. Kevin LeBanc, they got him. He's on for $1
million.
Yeah, that's
insane.
That is the best deal signed this summer. That is nuts.
Yeah, I don't know what he's thinking. Also, they locked up Erik Karlsson long term. Now he's making $11.5 million cap hit here for the next 7 years, eight years. Yeah, so that's a lot, but he's also one of the best defensemen in the league, and if he's healthy, that could be really good. Martin Jones, though, is also signed for 5 more years in goal. He was not good at all last year. So what do you guys think about San Jose?
Yeah, fun fact, the San Jose Sharks had the worst goaltending in the NHL last season. Bar none, like most goals allowed all year, San Jose. Signing Erik Karlsson.
And yet they got to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, The NHL playoffs are voodoo and make no sense. Signing Erik Karlsson is an unequivocal win. You had to do it. You had to extend him, probably that cap hit. But man, when you're paying, because he's what, 30 right now? And he's signed him for 8 years. Yeah. Like, yeah, he'll be 30. Yeah, yeah. So you're paying him till he's 37. That's a really, really tough contract if he doesn't stay healthy. And he's really struggled with injuries here lately, really throughout his career. So, yeah, that could be really bad, especially if, like, because he's a very smart defenseman, very good defenseman, but he relies a lot on his speed. So if he starts losing a step, that contract's going to look real, real tough here. And you really, if you're the San Jose, you're banking on your window is still open enough that you can get into the playoffs. And, you know, like you guys just mentioned, they made the Western Conference Finals. So maybe they get in and, you know, go on a run, get hot. Martin Jones becomes, you know, Jordan Binnington or Matt Murray of the last couple of years, and they make it to the Cup Finals and finally fulfill on their promise. But man, but you're hoping that Karlsson stays healthy and productive long enough for that window to stay open for a few more years, because San Jose, my biggest issue with what San Jose did this summer is they didn't really do anything to replace the production they lost from Joe Pavelski, who went down to Dallas, correct? They've got a big question mark on offense there. So,
well, they added Dalton Proud, so I don't know if that's totally true.
Yeah, what am I thinking?
But I do think they're banking on the kids, right? Like, I think they need Hurdle and Meyer to take that next step. I know Hurdle's 26, but I think that's, they're hoping that the kids finally have some room to grow now that the old guard may have moved on. And I mean, kudos to him for betting on him. That's kind of what the Jackets are doing now. But I don't know. I can see it. And I mean, got Logan Couture there, and Brent Burns is still there, and you know.
Yeah, I think they're still definitely a contender for the next couple seasons. They have a nice mix of veterans and young players, and they don't have really any egregious overpays. So I think their cap is balanced pretty nicely. They're up against it, but I think it's okay to spend the cap if you're a good team and you're spending it on good players, which I think is what they're doing. In the similar vein, there are the third place team in the Pacific were the Vegas Golden Knights at 93 points. So it was not quite the storybook season they had their first season in the league. Of course, they were eliminated in the first round in heartbreaking fashion. Well, it was heartbreaking for them. It was hilarious as a neutral observer, giving up 4 goals in a 5-minute major penalty. It was a bad call, but man, you can't give up 4 goals in 5 minutes. I don't care if it's a man advantage or not. You can't do that. But Vegas is also right up against the cap. But man, the way they've allotted their money, it looks really good. They've got Mark Stone, but Mark Stone is one of the best forwards in the league. And I think he's actually a little bit underrated even. But he's making $9.5 million, and that's totally fine. Max Pacioretty was disappointing last year, but I think he'll bounce back. I think he'll be fine. You know, they got Wild Bill at $5.9 a year long-term. JM is signed for 5 more years at a $5 million cap hit. That's really good. And did anyone think back in 2013 when Marchessault had a cup of coffee with the Jackets that he would become the player he is?
No, not at all.
No. No one's even gonna lie and claim credit for that. No. Their defense, I don't love it. Like their top pairs like Nate Schmidt and Shea Theodore. But again, no one's overpaid there at least.
There's one guy that's on that contract that's on that cap that's overpaid.
Go on.
Marc-Andre Fleury, baby. He's got 3 years left at $7 million a year, and he is 37 years old.
He's 34. He'll be 35 in November. Yeah, when it expires,
he'll be 37 when that contract. He'll be 37 when that contract ends. Boy, howdy, that contract ain't good, because Marc-Andre Fleury, we know he's dealt with injuries, you know. It's just, you know, yet when Vegas went on that run, they had to sign him. They, you know, at that point, he's the face of the franchise. But he went 35-21 last year, but only put up, you know, a league average save percentage. He put up a 913, league average was like 910. And he's not getting any younger, and that contract extension is finally kicking in. So Vegas needs, they're basically just going to have to score in track meets. They're going to have to outscore their guys, because I don't trust their defense, and I frankly don't trust Fleury for entire years anymore.
Yeah, but at least, yeah.
I think they make the playoffs and probably finish second in the division, but I don't, yeah.
And I will say that even if, yeah, their defense doesn't really impress me, their goaltending could go wrong if Fleury goes wrong, but their forwards, they have a lot of forwards who are really good defensively. You know, Stone is always a Selke contender. Yeah,
that's true.
William Karlsson is also similar that way.
Yeah, William Karlsson, that's a really good contract. And he's going to be their second line center. The only forward contract I don't really like is Paul Stastny's, but it's only a two year. There's only 2 years left on it, so that's fine.
Yeah, but and that's, you know, $6.5 million for a top six center. It's not terrible. All right. So then moving on to a really interesting team, the Arizona Coyotes, who were fourth in division last year with 86 points. They were kind of knocking on the door of the playoffs because the Western Conference just didn't have a very high bar, unlike the Eastern Conference. They locked up Clayton Keller at a really reasonable contract, kicks in next year, but $7 million. Now, do you guys think that's an okay contract for him?
Too much. Too much.
Yeah, I think it's too much. Yeah, I would agree.
Now, do you think his game is not going to improve, that he would get to that level?
I guess it's just kind of a big bet considering what he did last year. I mean, good for him for getting it. I've been hearing this every summer about the Coyotes for the last 3 or 4 years. Coyotes 2.0, right? Like, we've been waiting for this and it hasn't panned out. I think this might be the year. I know we're talking about Clayton Keller, but adding Phil Kessel, I think. Mm-hmm. And this team was so injured last year. I think they lost something like almost 400 man games to injury.
Oh, yeah.
I think that really did them in. And this division is so wacky and kind of up for grabs, especially considering the context of the West. I think this might be the team to make the leap.
Well, let me tell you, Ryan, that is my hot take. The Arizona Coyotes are back in the playoffs this year. We're going to get some home games with the Peyote Coyote. Arizona is going back to the playoffs this season. I think the addition of Phil Kessel is huge. And while he might not, you know, he's older, he's not going to be playing in Pittsburgh, but he's still good enough that, and he's in a market where, you know, there's not going to be that intense scrutiny of Toronto or Pittsburgh on him every night, where someone's not going to be yelling at him for every little thing he does. Phil Kessel is going to thrive in this environment with his, you know, man cave of one theater seat and terrible movie posters on the walls. Phil Kessel is going to have a great year, and Phil Kessel is going to lead the Arizona Coyotes to the playoffs. Mark it.
Well, down. And his game hasn't really fallen off though to right. this point. So
no,
I see.
As long as nobody hates him like Malkin does, as long as his line mate doesn't want to leave town.
I see two ways though this can go with Kessel. There's not going to be a middle ground. He either continues to play really well and carries this team for the next few years, and, you know, is kind of the veteran to guide this young group, because it's still a pretty young team. Or, alternately, because he's in Arizona and he can golf on every off day throughout the season that he's home, he can totally phone it in. He can put on even more weight, eat a bunch of hot dogs, and just collect his paycheck for the next 3 years. So it's going to go one of those two ways with no middle ground. That's what I think is going to happen there.
I could see that. I'm good for them. Go for it. Go for it. Get your money, Phil. Get your hot dogs.
All right. Then behind the Coyotes were the Vancouver Canucks at 81 points. Does anyone have anything to say about Vancouver?
They got to get Jim Benning out of there. That's all I got. Their management is just a mess from ownership down.
He signed an extension this summer, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my hot take is Vancouver needs to get Jim Benning out, and Elias Pettersson is really good.
Yeah, so I think they try to do a rebuild on the fly, the way that the Rangers apparently are doing it, but there's not enough there. There's just not enough there. I guess if you get Capo Caco and Artemi Panera, then yeah, you got a shot, but I mean, they got Brock Lesnar and they got Bo Horvat, but and Elias Pettersson. It's just not, the rest of it isn't there.
Well, this, and they still have to re-sign Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. I found this stat on Yahoo earlier that was Vancouver finished 29th in the league in expected goals for and was 31st in the league in high scoring danger chances for. They got to find some goal scorers, and they didn't find any this summer. So, yeah, they're just not going to. Yeah, nothing. I have nothing to say about Vancouver.
But they did sign Tyler Myers to 5 years at a $6 million cap hit.
Oh.
And their highest paid forward is Louis Eriksson.
What's going on out there?
Their third highest paid forward is JT Miller.
Are they trying to get relegated to the AHL?
So here's the thing. For goalies, they have Jacob Markstrom with a $3.6 million cap hit, Thatcher Demko with a $1.05 million cap hit, and Roberto Luongo with a $3 million recapture penalty hit for the next three seasons.
Is it bad? It's probably a bad sign that, like, you know, I follow this league really, really closely, more closely than any other sport or more closely than anything else in the entire world. And I have never heard of the Vancouver Canucks starting goaltender ever. I have never heard that name until you just read it. And I watched them play the Vancouver Canucks last year. So
yeah, if Thatcher Demko makes the leap as they're expecting, I don't know if they're expecting him to do it this year or if they're going to guide him in, but if he makes the leap, then it's a different conversation. I still don't think that they're making the playoffs if Thatcher Demko becomes Steve Mason or Carter Hart, or I don't know why I'm only naming Flyers goaltenders, but then it's a different conversation. But I don't know if that's going to happen this year.
And Quinn Hughes maybe could help the defense, but there seems to be a lot of dead weight there for him to drag around. So that's too bad. And then finally, a team that...
Yeah,
hate to see it, don't
hate
you, Ryan?
Hate to see it, yeah.
Don't you hate to see it?
Real bad, man.
The Los Angeles Kings were dead last at 71 points. Do you guys think they're going to get out of the cellar?
No. No, I do not. No, I don't. Jonathan Quick is a husk of his former self. He is a shell of a man.
Yeah. Speaking of guys who are shells of themselves, where have you gone, Drew Doughty? Drew Doughty is signed for like a long time, and like whenever Seth Jones gets his next contract, the comparable he's gonna be looking for is Drew Doughty. Like, that's just the contract he wants. He signed an 8-year, $88 million deal. He is currently signed through the 26-27 season at $11 million a year. None of that is signing bonus, though. I guess this is the first year of that extension. There's a modified no trade through that entire contract. This is the first year, and guys, Drew Doughty was bad last year. Now, granted, the rest of the team wasn't good around him, but Doughty last year, let's see. Doughty last year posted 45 points, just 8 goals, was a staggering minus 34. I know we bag on plus minus, but after he's been a positive player every year since his rookie season until going minus 34 last year. Played all 82 games, and he just kind of looked, he didn't even make the All-Star team last year. Like, guys, is Drew Doughty like washed?
I don't think so. Because he turns 30 in December, so he's not terribly old. It was just when he signed the extension, people thought, oh, well, this is great, because he was coming off a fantastic season. So I think he was somewhat hurt by his team being terrible, but I think he will bounce back. Now, is he ever going to play up to that $11 million standard? No, but I think he will be. I think he's not going to be as bad as this last season was, but it's just, there's just a lot of bad, there's just a lot of overpaid guys.
A lot of old guys on that team.
Six guys on the team have a cap hit above $5 million, and all of them are over the age of 30. Well, with the exception of Drew Doughty, who turns 30 in December.
Not great, Bob.
That is not great. But on the other hand, this is a bill coming due.
Yes.
Because the guys that are getting paid were part of two cup winning teams. So I think the Kings are probably in the position of, well, we won two cups.
Yeah.
Like, if we have to deal with a bit of a rebuild, so be it. The only problem is it's hard to move a lot of this dead weight because a lot of these guys have no trade clauses. So it's not like you can necessarily sell them off for parts yet. So I think they just have to tolerate being bad for a few more years, collect draft picks, you know, get high draft picks, draft well, and then hope for something good, you know, after the expansion draft.
No, I mean, you're right. That is the bill coming due. We saw it with the Blackhawks. We see it. It's the cyclical nature of the salary cap era. But Kovalchuk didn't do, you know, what they hoped he would. He is 35 years old and he hasn't played in the NHL in a long time. So that makes sense. You know, he's struggling to find his footing on this side of the ocean. And, like, you just look at the Dustin Brown still getting it done at 34. I mean, he's got 50 points, but you can't, this can't keep happening forever. They got to get Jack Campbell in there. They got to lean on some of the youth. But as you said, you hate to see it.
Now, speaking of hating to see it, Jeff Carter, notably, does not have a no trade clause.
Oh.
So what would be the most hilarious place for him to get traded to?
Edmonton.
With 3 years left as contract. unfortunately, I don't see them having the space, but oh man, wouldn't that be? Oh, although they do have $23 million in space going into next season, Edmonton does.
James Neal flounders and they ship him out of town for Jeff Carter. Make it happen.
Dubois over Puljujärvi all these years later. Holy boats. I was so wrong about that. I think a lot of people were, but I swore Puljujärvi was going to torture the Jackets for the next decade.
You know who wasn't wrong about that? Well, besides Jarmo Kekalainen.
I was going to say Jarmo Kekalainen.
Yeah, Jarmo.
But also me, because I was the one person in the comments of the of the draft article saying, I was just saying like, hey, like, look, we don't know. We haven't, as fans, most of us haven't watched these guys. Like, maybe the front office scouts know what they're doing. So I can't take too much credit for it, but it does feel pretty nice.
Yeah, you want to know who wrote that draft article and was real mad about picking Dubois over Jesse Puljujärvi? Eric Seeds, guys. I was really displeased with that pick.
If the sentence ever starts with real mad, you know it was an Eric Seat special.
Yep. I can't tell you how many highlights of Puljujärvi I'd watched. I'd watched all his highlight videos. I was like, this guy's going to be a stud. He's going to come in and just, you know, wreck shop for this team. And boy, howdy, was I wrong. So never happy to be more wrong, but...
So I realized, and this is probably says a lot about this team, but I did forget one. Anaheim.
I noticed.
Not intentional, but that's a team that I don't see snapping back. What do you guys think?
They got a new coach, Dallas Aikens. You know, they got Anthony Stolarz from the Flyers. No, their offense was one of the worst in the league last year. They lost Corey Perry.
Brian Kessler's done for the year.
Yeah. The Ducks are a pass for me, dog.
Honestly, can we just like send SEAL Team 6 in and get John Gibson out?
Yes.
Send him to some place that actually like has a functioning defense and can score goals in front of him, because John Gibson might be the best goaltender in the league and no one will ever see him because he plays behind the rest. I'm just gesturing wildly at whatever because there's nothing in front of him. And then they're trying to trade Andre Case out of there. So
for Justin Falk, there was talk about that.
Yeah, but
Justin Falk has no trade clause, and maybe it wasn't really keen on going there.
Do you guys know how many 20 goal scorers Anaheim had last year?
How many?
One. Jakob Silverberg scored 24 goals. The only Duck.
Wow.
Yikes.
And the Jackets had what, five, not including the ones they traded for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan Getzlaff led the team in scoring last year with 48 points.
Mm. Rough stuff. I mean, this is part of another bill coming due for them. They're another team who contended for a long time, and, you know, they got old.
I will say, though, Gibson having a $6.4 million cap hit is like an insanely good contract for the Mets. Because I agree that he's a good goalie, and I think he's going to continue being a good goalie for a while. And he obviously doesn't need a great defense in front of him. So that I think helps things a lot. So I think they're a team that maybe, like the Rangers, could do a pretty quick rebuild. You know, Getzlaff, his contract expires after just two more seasons. And then there's no one else getting terribly overpaid for a really long time. Adam Henrique and Jacob Silverberg are signed for the next 5 years each, but at under $6 million each. So I feel like they've got a lot of wiggle room to rebuild. And they've got some young guys, but I just don't think they're going to be good enough this next year. And their blue line really does not impress me very much either.
But other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
So to wrap this up, what do you guys think the order of finish will be in the Pacific Division? Who do you think is going to make the playoffs?
Yeah, I guess I would have Arizona in the top three, because I only have three teams from this division going to the playoffs. I've got Vegas winning the Pacific. I've got San Jose finishing second. I think they continue to march along, even though they lost Joe Pavelski. And I think Phil Kessel leads Arizona to the playoffs. I've got Calgary finishing fourth, Vancouver fifth, Edmonton sixth, Anaheim seventh, and the Kings eighth. So there we go.
All right, Ryan, do you agree or disagree?
I will say, I think Calgary has another good year. I don't know if I want to put them up number one. Screw it. Let's do it. I'll put Calgary, Vegas, San Jose, and I will say Arizona makes as a wild card. I don't know how, but that's what I'm feeling in my gut.
The cannon loves Arizona.
Yes, we're in on Arizona. We're desert dogs. And then the rest of this, just my eyes just glaze over and it's so bad. Let's say Edmonton, Vancouver, LA, Anaheim. That's my eight.
Ooh, that's what's in. Yeah, I will go also with Vegas as number one. I will go with San Jose as number two. I think I will stick with Calgary 3, Arizona 4, but I think that's going to be a tough battle. And I don't know yet whether I think the Central is going to be good enough to also take both wild cards. We'll have to see on that. I'm going to go Anaheim in 5th, but then the Canucks in 6th, Oilers in 7th again, and the Kings in 8th place again.
Can I ask a question of you two? Hi, Pup Dragon. apparently I'm allowed to ask a question. All right. Does Connor McDavid request the trade next summer?
No. No, I think he's too white bread to ever rock the boat with something like that. I think he's in it for the long haul. He'll collect his paycheck. He'll collect his individual stats and maybe individual trophies. He just doesn't strike me as the type to get like angry and say, screw it, I'm out of here. Get rid of me.
If they are in the basement again, I mean, Seeds is right though. He is so dead inside. And every time he talks about losing, it is just gets worse and worse. There may be, I don't know if he requests a trade, but there may be enough. I don't know. Remember years ago, people were throwing jerseys on the ice and people, that team has never gotten any better. That whole franchise is a mess. Who knows what could happen, but I don't think he asks out, but
I don't think he does either. But I think at some point, man, you're going to hear someone from his camp. Like there's going to be a story written where his camp is leaking something that like Connor's real unhappy that they finished, you know, with below 80 points two of the last 3 years or something. And Edmonton's got to turn it around and Connor's going to start asking or Connor's going to ask out. And the pressure's really going to be on Ken Holland to turn that team around real quick. That's my biggest takeaway from the Pacific Division is, can Ken Holland in the next 2 years find a way to utilize Connor McDavid while he's still in his prime?
Well, who would trade for him, and what do you think it would take to get him?
Every team would try to trade for him. It would take the moon to get him.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about multiple first-round picks, right?
Yes.
Multiple prospects and probably at least one or two NHL players.
Probably.
Is that enough? Is that too much?
I can't recall what the Gretzky trade was off the top of my
head. That's literally what I'm looking up right now.
but I would say it's
Gretzky also had other guys in there in that deal.
And I feel like, you know, this contract would a trade of Connor McDavid would have to just to make it work. But yeah, I'm gonna say that if the Jackets tried, let's hypothetically say the Columbus Blue Jackets tried to trade for Connor McDavid right now, it would probably take at a bare minimum, it would take Alex Texier, Liam Foudy, your next two first round picks, and Emil Bemström, and maybe another prospect. Like, it's going to be a lot, but if Connor McDavid ever is remotely available, it's a high price to pay for a generational talent.
I think Edmonton would probably also ask for one of the top two defensemen.
And I think that's where Columbus says no. Unless you can pull one of those forwards out, like keep Texier and throw in Zach Werenski, because I don't think the team's ever letting Seth Jones go.
Yeah. So what if it's like Werenski, a first, say Anderson, and a prospect? Would you make that trade?
Yeah, I probably would.
I would.
And I love Zach Werenski, but I would make that trade.
I probably would as well. I was thinking of like the Nash trade where you had two, like one top six player, one middle six player, a prospect, and a first round pick. And that was to get, 6 years of Rick Nash. So I'm thinking that's the starting point for McDavid, and probably would demand even more higher caliber players than that. But again, I don't know that Edmonds is looking to do that yet. But a couple years down the line, they might have to.
All right, we are bumping up on time. But as Angela Purley plays us out, PD, you just saw her recently, correct?
I did. I was at their album release show at Scully's Music Diner, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, check her out if you haven't. Her album's 430. I appreciate her allowing us to use Angela Purley and Howlin' Moon's Green Eyes to play us out. Thank you for listening. You can find us at jacketscanon.com. You can find us on Twitter at CBJCanon. We are also on Facebook. Elaine, we miss you. Will, we miss you. We will see you guys down the road. From all of us at the Canon, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.